Bonds have long been seen as safe and steady, the ballast in a portfolio. But in today's markets, is that reputation still deserved? Hello and welcome to The More You Know, the podcast from Stanlib Asset Management. I'm Jeremy Maggs. And my guest today is Peter van der Ross, Deputy Head of Multi-Asset. Peter, a very warm welcome. So, Peter, let's start with this and maybe paint a broad picture. Traditionally, and correct me if I'm wrong, equities are viewed as risky while bonds provide defense. Do you agree with that, or is it the diversification that often provides the ballast that people want?
Okay, so broadly, yes, I'd say those statements are correct. Equities are about growing your investments in real terms over time, and bonds are about essentially getting paid your money back. Hopefully, somewhat in excess of inflation, but not by much. So there should be quite a strong disconnect between the level of returns one gets from those two assets. Of course, the whole point of combining them in a multi-asset portfolio is that when you look at the total portfolio outcome, you want something that's fairly stable over time. And so the combination is to provide that stability. You don't want a portfolio that's massively volatile as a purely equity fund would be. So a multi-asset fund is supposed to be more stable. And yes, the bonds are supposed to be the defensive, cautious type asset that provide that ballast.
So how do you find the balance then?
Well, bonds do different things at different times, and especially one needs to be cautious when bonds are weak, because they can be weak for good or for bad reasons. Good reasons being when there's a strong economic growth and the market's expecting inflation to rise, those bonds tend to do a bit poorly then. I'm doing this with kind of yields going up, bond prices going down. That's a good reason for bonds to sell off, because there's lots of economic growth. And at that time, that would be the more traditional relationship, where bonds do poorly because equities are doing well and there's inflation and strong demand, etc. The converse is when you have a recession, equities do poorly and bonds do well because interest rates are going to get cut, inflation will come down. So those are the traditional bits of economic logic that underlie this kind of ballast idea between equities and bonds offsetting each other. Of course, the offset to equity is not necessarily a bond. It's something that simply diversifies the equity. In other words, it's a stream of returns that comes to you at different times that the equity return comes to you at. And that's the nugget. You're looking for that diversification. You're looking for something that pays you when equity markets are not necessarily paying you. And that's not always bonds.
All right, I want to come back to the ballast argument a little bit later in the conversation, but that's theory, so let's talk a little bit more practically now. Hard currency bonds from the UK, Germany, and Japan, I think, have been weak this year. Shouldn't they be offering more protection at a time of geopolitical and economic stress?
So bond markets, remember, the bond market is nothing but the price of the government's borrowing. And they borrow over 2-year time frames, 5 years, 10 years, 30 years. It's in that 30-year space in particular that those geographies have been weak across the names you mentioned. And they've been weak for different reasons. Japan probably happily is experiencing some inflation for the first time since the 80s. And they've been battling against a disinflation, or in fact, sometimes outright deflationary spiral for 3 decades. And so it's kind of a nice problem to have. Nevertheless, that period has spoilt them into being somewhat fiscally reckless. As their cost of borrowing continued to come down for 30 years, they could borrow more and more, which is fine when the cost of borrowing comes down. But when it starts going up, as it has been doing for the last couple of years, it really starts to squeeze them. We saw Prime Minister Ishiba having to resign a week or so ago. It was due to these fiscal strains and breaks that are now being put on via the bond market. We see weak coalition governments in both Germany and the UK, the other geographies you mentioned. Again, it's because of these fiscal tensions building, and the market is starting to put the brakes on and saying, you can borrow, these governments can borrow over 2, 5, 10 years. We won't stress about your ability to repay us as bond investors. But looking further you know, beyond the next economic cycle or two. So that's the 30-year bond market. The bond market is saying, look, at some stage, you're going to have to repay us. And we're struggling to see how you're going to do that. And that's why these markets are selling off.
All right. So given the sell-off and with tariffs not yet fueling inflation, yeah, although there is the expectation of that,
yeah,
are developed market bonds attractive right now?
What's strange is, let me take a little step back. When in the global financial crisis, I'm going back to 2008, for the first time then we saw an unusual phenomenon where we saw some very high-grade corporate debt trade at tighter or lower rates than some governments. So up until then, all the theory was, well, sovereign paper, paper issued by a government is risk-free, and then you would stack on corporate risk, et cetera, in your kind of risk stack. For the first time in the GFC, you had some corporates trading tighter or at a lower cost of debt than some governments. And that starts to question how you see the world. Hang on, what is risk-free?
Mm.
You've got a similar dynamic playing out now where some of those traditional spreads are changing. So, for example, France is a good one where forever and a day, Italian debt was more expensive than French debt. In other words, the French government was a better credit in the eyes of the market than the Italian government. So the Spanish government. Those are shifting now. And these fiscal dynamics, they build gradually over time. And the market, for a long time, doesn't pay attention to them. But when it does start paying attention, it can really squeeze these governments' ability to tap the market and borrow more. So you are starting to see shift in what is considered risky versus what is considered safe. So France, not as safe within Europe as previously considered. A lot of the big developed markets, not as safe relative to their past as some emerging market sovereigns. So the volatility of some emerging market bonds is lower now than some of these developed market bonds. So yes, it does start to question what one's views as well. What is risky and what is safe in this space? I suppose, again, let me take a little step to the side. The way we think about assets, one of our key tenets is all assets are risk assets. So there is no such thing as a safe asset. Mm. Every asset simply is a bundle of risks. And when you buy that asset, you've got to have your eyes open and understand, well, what are the risks I'm taking on when I buy this asset? And those risks change over time. So in short, what we like about some developed market bonds is the valuation argument. They are definitely getting cheaper. You can buy a 30-year pound-denominated bond now yielding north of 5.5%. Now, for a South African saver, most people will take that every day of the week. 5.5% in pounds for 30 years.
That'll work. You take
that, right? But to get to that point, those bonds have lost a lot of value, and our bonds domestically have rallied very hard. So maybe it is time to start making that switch, but you can't switch too far ahead of the broad market because otherwise you're just stepping out into traffic.
So give me a little bit more then on South African bonds,
yep,
within that global context, yep, then.
So we've been in something of a sweet spot. As you said, we've not seen much effect from tariffs. Well, firstly, we expect the tariff inflationary effect to be contained largely to the US. It's their initiative. They're increasing the cost of goods domestically. Mm. And we think we understand why, but nevertheless, that is what they're doing.
And they're starting to feel the pain already.
Yes, yep. But outside of the US, there's not much inflation, including here. We know that China is one of our big trading partners. China's been they've had negative inflation for a couple of years now, zero to slightly negative, and that's filtering into our market. That's why we see our inflation so low. So we've got to maybe unanchor some of our thinking going, well, a South African bond yield at 10% is a different prospect when inflation is at 6 versus when inflation is at 3. So that real yield buffer is incredibly attractive both to us and we think to the global investor. We're seeing more and more global investors attracted to our bond market. And those bonds have done exceptionally well. The underlying fiscal dynamic we know is still tricky. We know about the structural problems. Those haven't really gone away. We think we have a cyclical sort of reprieve year, given how well our mining companies should be doing with what gold and latterly platinum are doing. That's going to boost the fiscus somewhat. So we've got a little bit more, our runway's been extended a bit more, but we think, you know, the longer term underlying fiscal dynamics, those haven't changed. Inflation has, some commodity prices have, and they've bought us a bit more time to fix the underlying dynamics, which we know are still very, very tricky.
All right, part two of this conversation in just a moment. This is The More You Know from StanLib. I'm in conversation with Peter van der Ross, exploring whether bonds are still the